Hello, listener of the Third Sector podcast. This is Lucinda, and I thought you might be wondering what this unusual piece of content is on the Third Sector feed. In addition to our weekly show, we've just launched The End of Charity. It's a six-part documentary in which we ask whether the current charity model is fit for purpose and explore what the future might hold for the sector. It features some of the leading voices from the charity world, as well as radical thinkers who believe there's a need to disrupt the status quo. If you'd like to hear more, you can search for The End of Charity and subscribe or follow to be the first to know when we release new episodes. I hope you enjoy it. Imagine a world far from your own, which is full of problems.
6 months ago, this orphanage in South Africa looked like this. And despite having saved more than 5,000 children's lives over time, it was about to get shut down.
But armed with a big wadge of cash, you can go and solve whichever issue takes your fancy.
When hearing about this, we made it our mission to ensure this doesn't happen by rebuilding 12 new homes with an ongoing supply of fresh food, as well as a brand new playground.
From helping orphan children in South Africa to solving the conundrum of safe drinking water.
You just witnessed a small village in Kenya get access to unlimited clean drinking water in less than a second.
One down, 99 more wells in Africa to go.
It would feel great, wouldn't it? But if you work for a charity, you'll know that doesn't happen easily. Raising funds is a full-time job in itself, and how you spend your donors' money is also quite rightly scrutinised. But Jimmy Donaldson, an online megastar from North Carolina, has created a world where he can do just that.
Thank goodness Jimmy has the heart that he has, because he looked at what he's achieved and he's like, I've got all of this influence, I've got all of this fame, and I've got all of this wealth, and I want to do something meaningful with it.
You're listening to The End of Charity. I'm Lucinda Rouse, and in this series, we ask whether the traditional concept of charity has had its day. In this episode, we're going to find out more about Jimmy Donaldson. He's a YouTuber, better known as Mr. Beast. Here's our resident philanthropy expert, Rodri Davis.
Anyone who's a parent is probably aware of Mr. Beast because their children have watched his videos on YouTube and they've probably wondered, what is this awful thing that you're watching? I know that was certainly my first introduction to it. Essentially, he's the world's most successful YouTuber and he started off making prank videos and then increasingly these kind of challenge videos where he'd do lots of stupid things like fill his friends' houses with Lego bricks.
After experimenting with the YouTube algorithm as a teenager, Mr. Beast now commands a subscriber base of 242 million people, and he's a multi-million dollar outfit, with a workforce to boot, formed of writers, producers, and film crews. He has multiple channels on the platform, one of which is Beast Philanthropy. It's a charitable venture that he launched in 2020, and of course he hired someone to lead that channel too.
Hi, I'm Darren Margolius. I'm the executive director of Beast Philanthropy.
Darren comes from a background in commercial property. He was also running an animal shelter on the side.
Through skydiving, I met a friend of mine and he became the CEO for Jimmy's group and he invited me to come up and meet Jimmy because they wanted to do a video where they got every dog in a dog shelter adopted. And about 10 minutes after I met him, Jimmy told me that he had been planning a philanthropy for a couple of years and looking for the right guy and he felt that I was the right guy and he offered me the position.
So, from Darren's perspective, what was the driving force behind this world-famous YouTuber getting involved in doing good for others?
Jimmy has always been focused on using the wealth and the popularity that he has to try and improve the lives of other people. When he got offers in his first sponsorship, he was offered $5,000 and he said to the sponsor, give me $10,000 and I'll go give it to a homeless person. And that, I think, was the first experience that Jimmy really had where he discovered for himself the joy that comes back when you do something amazing for somebody else.
And this video, we're curing 1,000 people's blindness. It's gonna be crazy.
Mr. Beast has a large and loyal following, and he's managed to attract more than 22 million subscribers to his philanthropy channel.
That's around 10% of his main channel subscriber base. The numbers are undeniably impressive. So how does he manage to attract so many people to his philanthropic projects? And what is he doing differently compared to more established charities?
When you're making videos on YouTube, it is important that you make videos that are going to get engagement because of the way that the YouTube algorithm works. So when I compare ourselves to other charities, it's very different. Other charities are all laser focused on a single issue. In order for us to get the messages that we want to get, in order for us to influence the next generation, we have to have them engaging with the channel. And in order to have them engaging with the channel, we have to have a diversity of content, not be focused on just one issue because people will get bored of that, but to do a whole bunch of different stories. So one week we're doing a project where we're building wells, and another week we're doing projects where we're building houses, and another week we're doing projects where we're paying for surgeries, and another week we're doing projects where we're buying prosthetic limbs for people. So we're very different to other charities that way. But we consider the most important thing that Beast Philanthropy is doing, the influence that we're having on tens of millions of kids. When they come and they watch our content, they are now realizing that they want to help, that they have the ability to get involved. And we are going to start pushing that even harder in the videos coming up.
Mr. Beast certainly knows how to capture the imagination of his audience and the YouTube algorithm. Here's Rodri.
I guess we're at this interesting point where the question is, well, you know, is it better that he's doing this than many of the other things that he could be doing with his fame? The alternative is that, you know, the young people, particularly young, you know, boys who are watching his videos where he goes and does these acts of charity, could be watching Andrew Tate videos or something equally awful. And so actually, you know, it's relatively harmless in the context of the wider world of YouTube.
Harmless within the bounds of YouTube, maybe. But what does Rodri think about how Mr. Beast's exploits fit into the wider charity space?
There's a question about whether that promotes a sort of unhealthy idea of what charity and philanthropy is, and that maybe it's kind of giving people the idea that, you know, you can do good in the world simply by doing something as passive as watching these videos. But it is also fascinating in that it's, you know, has he created this sort of new philanthropic perpetual motion machine that actually cleverly feeds itself and somehow produces money from, you know, advertising that can then go towards good causes.
Just by clicking play on this video, you've already helped pay for someone to get a prosthetic limb. That is insane.
The other thing, I guess, that's interesting about it and has caused some controversy is the model that he uses. I think particularly the video he did where he cured 1,000 blind people, this drew quite a lot of criticism because people said, well, it was a bit distasteful. To a lot of people, it sort of exemplified a quite problematic old-fashioned views of charity and philanthropy that's about an individual rich person coming in and by, you know, their largesse, saving the lives of lots of poor people who are sort of suffering from poverty or illness. And I think there is something uncomfortable in his videos about the fact that it's him as this kind of magical Willy Wonka figure coming in and, you know, going around and doing good, you know, fundamentally good acts to people. But the video is all about then, you know, how they react with incredible gratitude to it. And the power dynamics in the videos are pretty awkward and uncomfortable.
But could discomfort be a means to an end? As far as Darren's concerned, the contemporary model of charity just isn't going far enough. He sees value in creating an inspirational figure for young people to follow.
If you look at the amount of money that is spent every year by the US government and by the massive charitable foundations and everything, it's not enough to go around. It's never going to be enough. But if we can teach kids to start thinking about each other differently, to be a little bit more generous, to be kinder, to go and take action themselves, then that will be what will move the needle on human suffering and address all of the issues that humanity faces these days. When more of the population gets engaged in tackling these problems, that's where the change is going to come from.
The entertainment appeal of these videos is very important to their success. And it's the gratitude of the people being helped which seems to make a good video great. Now, this isn't really news to charities. In fact, a lot of the MrBeast magic has been practiced by charities for years. If you've watched a fundraising telethon in the past decade, Red Nose Day, Children in Need, you may have noticed the Appeal films hit many of his beats, evoking feelings of sadness with an uplifting finish, centering humanity and reminding the viewer that they have the power to change things for the better. But here's the thing. In recent years, many charities have made conscious efforts to pull away from this model of raising awareness because of concerns around the ways that this kind of video can dehumanize or even exploit the people it features. Back in 2019, the fundraising charity Comic Relief, which runs Red Nose Day, found itself at the heart of a very public white savior row after the documentary filmmaker Stacey Dooley published a picture on Instagram of herself holding a black child while visiting Comic Relief projects in Uganda. That term, white savior, for anyone who may not be familiar, refers to a tradition of viewing white people as rescuing people in marginalized communities. As Rodri points out, the power dynamic between the people doing the good deed and those on the receiving end can be pretty uncomfortable. Let's go back to where we started this episode, in the South African orphanage where Mr. Beast and his team not only refurbished the facility to the delight of its director, but also tracked down a former resident and budding musician and helped set him on his way to a career in music.
So we decided to surprise Yamkela with a top-of-the-range professional acoustic guitar. But the best part is we're going to be enrolling Yamkela in one of the best music schools in South Africa and paying all his living expenses for the entire year.
I don't know what to say. Thank you. Thank you so much.
He's kind of rediscovered the fundamental truth that people really like watching people doing kind acts to other people, and also the reactions. It's problematic that his videos rely on the recipients being really, really grateful, but that's what people like to see. And I think you can tell that because there's a kind of wider trend now in the world of YouTube and TikTok for random acts of kindness videos, some of which are much more problematic than Mr. Beast, but they all kind of revolve around people doing quote-unquote nice or good acts to strangers and then capturing their unguarded reactions to it, and people love this stuff. And, you know, I think that's a very natural human response to seeing, you know, people grateful for someone else showing them a kindness.
For Darren, playing on this appeal is a way of making sure the videos reach their sizable intended audience and have the desired effect of making viewers kinder. And it also explains why they focus on the stories that they do, stories of personal impact on the lives of individual people.
The primary thing that we always look for is, are we going to be able to help a marginalized or vulnerable community of people in a way that makes a meaningful difference to that community and a persistent difference in that community? And then we're going to ask, second to that, can we do it in a way that it's going to be a relatable video that people are going to want to engage with? Because, like I explained, the most important thing that we'll do with the channel is that we're using it to influence tens of millions of kids in a positive way. But now, if we do videos, if I do a video about something that the audience is going to find tremendously boring, then nobody's going to watch it, and we are going to lose that engagement. We are going to lose the opportunity to reinforce the message that we want to do. You know, if I get up there and I start talking about global warming, we're going to get a very small click-through rate. People aren't going to click in the video, so they're not even going to start watching it. But if we find an angle to it where we can explain it to people in a way like, this is the impact of global warming. Look at this family over here and look at how global warming is affecting them. This is how it's changing people's lives. And they can understand it and they can empathize with those people and see something that they can relate to. Then they're going to watch the video. And in the video, we'll explain to them that this is a consequence of global warming.
So how does Darren believe Mr. Beast has the edge over traditional charity storytelling?
Too many charities think that when they make a YouTube video, that it's going to be the equivalent of a PowerPoint presentation in video. They're going to talk about the facts and you know, this is where we are and all of that kind of stuff. And that's why none of them get any views. But if they find a way for the audience to care about the issue, to make the audience feel emotional about it, the issue, we want to make our audience feel, you know, sad and empathetic towards it. And then we want to make them feel uplifted towards the end and show them that there is a way out of this and they can get involved and they can actually do something about it That is how you inspire people to get involved themselves and start making change.
When it comes to the clicks, something is clearly working. Let's look at Comic Relief again. The charity's 2024 Red Nose Day telethon saw 3.6 million viewers tune in on the night. That 10-minute video where Mr. Beast built 100 wells in Africa, in 4 months, it's been viewed more than 164 million times. Maybe charities could learn a thing or two about Mr. Beast's storytelling methods and his appeal to younger donors. But should they even be trying to enter his space? Here's Rodri.
I suspect any organisation that tried to, you know, produce its own video that replicated the virality of a Mr. Beast one would fall flat on its face because it would probably be slightly embarrassing. I think maybe there are lessons about the immediacy of what he's doing and the focus on human connection. And I think a reminder that actually, fundamentally, people give to people. And even where that ends up addressing a cause in a wider sense, you know, by kind of giving to an organization that also funds research and other things, actually, certainly in the context of social media, what seems to really work is individual appeals and individual stories. And I think there's definitely something in that that charities can learn about how they present the work they do, you know, and kind of focusing back down on the impact on individuals.
But Darren goes a step further. He suggests that people wishing to do good should follow Mr. Beast's example and skip out charity structures altogether.
I advocate for people to getting involved themselves. Go and help a person directly. Don't do it through a charity. It's much more rewarding when you help a person directly. You're going to get the experience of doing it, and you're going to know that it was done well.
Of course, there is potential for problems with this idea. People who lack the appropriate skills inserting themselves into a situation that they're not fully equipped to address can cause more harm than good, and sometimes the consequences can be devastating. Take the case of the American high school graduate, Renee Bach, who set up a children's charity and clinic in Uganda in 2009 at the age of just 20. Bach had no medical training, but began providing treatment, including blood transfusions, to seriously ill children. 105 died while under her care in just 5 years. This is, of course, a very extreme example of what can go wrong. And the work of Mr. Beast is a world away from the dangerous actions of Renee Bach. So is Darren onto something with his idea of encouraging simple but effective acts of kindness? It would appear that charities are catching on to Mr. Beast's success in this area.
Every day we get multiple reach-outs from some of the biggest charities in the world. All of them want to find a way to collaborate with us because they want us to platform into our audience. And they don't know how to talk to millennials properly. They don't know how to relate to Gen Z or kids.
But Beast Philanthropy avoids partnerships with big charities. Darren's preference is for smaller ones to support on their projects, in part because he's skeptical about the efficiency of large charities.
I like to be close to the people who are close to the problem. And I think the bigger a charity gets, the less in touch with the people and the less in touch with the problems they become. And I like to find those people that are super passionate, the people that who have given up everything in their life to help other people. And I want to support those people. And I find that we have much more success. It's much more efficient. We can also help build charities in a way that is very, very meaningful to them. If I go and do a project with a charity that already has $200 million a year in revenue, what we'll be able to do for them might not even move the needle. But if we go to a channel that has $250,000 a year in revenue, we're going to change their world.
But despite his world-changing ambitions, Mr. Beast hasn't been immune to criticism, both about his possible motives and his attitude to helping some very vulnerable people.
What was interesting about that video for me is that the comms was actually better than most international development campaigns that I see coming out of the UK.
This is Martha Awajobi, an anti-racism and charity leadership consultant. We're going to be hearing more from her later in the series when we explore issues of power in the sector and who holds it.
I won't lie. Even though it was like deeply problematic, there was a lot of white savior tropes in it. You know, these like two white people come in, all these smiling kids being like, thank you so much. Thank you so much. But it does point to a wider kind of conversation around like philanthrocapitalism. And what I mean by philanthrocapitalism is how kind of good deeds and philanthropy can be done in the pursuit of profit. Mr. Beast has got a huge YouTube operation, so he's probably thinking about how to kind of capitalize on and maximize his profits in that. Philanthrocapitalism, philanthropic imperialism, it's all kind of part of the same story. I won't lie, I enjoyed the video though.
In the YouTube video that launched Beast Philanthropy, Mr. Beast said that 100% of the revenue generated by the channel would be reinvested into the organization. So what does Darren have to say about Martha's allegation of philanthrocapitalism and motivations of profit?
Some people will be like, oh, it just does it for the views. Beast Philanthropy on the best months that we have will pull between 50 and 60 million views. Jimmy pulls, you know, in the billions of views every month. What we are doing on the Beast Philanthropy channel is a rounding error for Jimmy. He doesn't need it. He does it because he truly believes that this is what he should be doing, that he's been very blessed, if that's a word you want to use, to find himself in the situation that he has, and he wants to use it as best as he can to help as many people as he can.
But white saviorism, philanthropic imperialism, Martha's talking about some deep-rooted issues which the wider charity sector has been grappling with for years. We asked Darren about some of the accusations pitted against Mr. Beast's video in which he rebuilt the orphanage. Some people thought he should have been promoting fostering as a better solution to a broken system.
I don't know what the perfect solution is. I'm not trying to find the perfect solution. I don't know whether ultimately the foster system is a better system than the orphanage system or anything like that. All I know is that there were 120 kids that were living in an orphanage that was going to get shut down. I'm going to make sure that 120 kids aren't put out into the streets in Khayelitsha, South Africa, because there's nowhere else for them to stay. The reason that the Health and Safety Department was looking at the orphanage was because they had asbestos roofs. Asbestos will lead to those, all of the kids that go through there potentially getting cancer. I wasn't okay with that. So I'm not advocating that orphanages are better than any other solution. All that I wanted to do in that project is help the 120 kids that were living in that orphanage. There's been 5,000 kids that have gone through that orphanage over the last 30 years. There might be another 5,000 that go through there in the next 30 years. Let's give them an environment where it's safe for them and it's comfortable and it feeds their dignity a little bit more than it does. As to the criticism about white savior, I think that is the most ridiculous criticism that we've ever got. Because I'm not sure what a person who's calling us a white savior is thinking. Are they advocating us for us simply to help white people because I'm white? Is that what the definition of racism? If I came out and said, okay, I acknowledge that I don't want you guys to call me a white savior, so we will not help anybody of color, would that not be the most abhorrent thing that we could do? I tell people every day, we help people that suffer, without regard to who they are, what country they're from, what religion they are, what color they are, how tall or short they are. I don't care about any of that. If we come across people that are in need and we can help them, I will help them. And I'm sorry if that offends anybody. It's a ridiculous thing to say. It's an offensive thing to say. And it doesn't bother me at all.
We played this clip to Martha to see what she thought.
Wow. I mean, I find it so interesting, like just how difficult people find it to really engage with, you know, any kind of like, you know, accusation of oppression. Like it's as though somebody's come in and attacked you or like accused you of like murdering someone or something. Like it's really like how quickly people will try and clear their name. I'm not really interested in what this person thinks about white saviorism at all. Because with a response like that, you can understand the motivations more than anything is about kind of like reputation rather than thinking, you know, engaging with how you might potentially be causing harm and perpetuating these issues that lots of people have been fighting against for many, many, many years.
But should Mr. Beast's charitable interventions be smarter than this? Should it be Darren's job to encourage Mr. Beast to tackle some of these social injustices head on, something the wider sector is already grappling with.
This is not a, you know, an operation that is rooted in justice. It's not an operation that thinks about, okay, how has the historical, you know, legacy of colonialism, of extraction, of exploitation created the conditions where there's an orphanage like this? It's really thinking about, yeah, how do we make money? How do we do good deeds? And if we were thinking, if we really cared about doing good deeds, when people then said, actually, your deeds are not that good, we would engage with that. We would think about, what does that mean for our work? What is the, you know, rather than thinking about how do we clear our name as quickly as possible so we can carry on doing the things that make us money.
Martha's suggesting that Mr. Beast needs to be doing some deeper thinking if he truly wants to tackle some of the world's biggest problems and the deep-rooted injustices they stem from. But what about the consumers of his videos? Should they be thinking twice before clicking on to see his next stunt? Here's Rodri again.
As you're watching it, you sort of feel like, am I complicit in something that is quite problematic? Because he is, you know, perpetuating often pretty uncomfortable ideas of poverty and charity. It's crass, you know, quite a lot of the time. I think the way in which he represents problems of illness and poverty are problematic. And that was one of the issues around the video that he did as he said, curing blindness. You know, he's sort of presenting himself as coming in and waving a magic wand. And I think a lot of people sort of said it's irresponsible because it makes some of these problems seem much simpler than they are. And it kind of presents problems of disability and illness and poverty as if they are simply things that can be solved in that way. All it requires is to wait long enough for some, you know, well-intentioned wealthy person to be wandering past and then kind of decide to deal with it. Whereas actually they're problems that need addressing in a more fundamental way because, you know, they represent sort of failings in the way society's working. And to some extent, to give him his credit, Mr. Beast, I think, has shown signs of recognising that. There was one response he put out in a tweet to that criticism, and he said, well, yeah, obviously it would be better if the government paid for all of this surgery to deal with blindness so that I didn't have to. And that's interesting, because I think for the first time you got this sense of, oh, right, maybe he does realise that there's this uncomfortable, you know, element of what he's doing. That being said, it hasn't stopped him going on and doing very similar videos, you know, along the same lines since.
Is Mr. Beast the answer to tackling the poverty and injustice that charities have been fighting for over a century? Probably not. But does he have a platform which enables him to reach and appeal to a whole generation in a way that charities can only dream of? Almost certainly. In the next episode, we'll be looking at who charities are missing, and Darren's preference for small, local organisations, and his belief that personal charitable endeavours are the real way forward, are shared by some of the people we'll be hearing from. But what's next for Beast Philanthropy?
I don't know where we'll be 5 years from now. I've got some big plans, but every single goal that I set, by the time that I thought that we'd reach it, we have so far surpassed it that I don't even try to guess what it's going to be a year from now, never mind 5 or 3 years from now.
The End of Charity is brought to you by Third Sector, the UK's leading title for the voluntary and not-for-profit sector. It was written and presented by me, Lucinda Rouse, and edited by Emily Burt. The producers were Ollie Peart and Penny Bell at Rethink Audio. And special thanks to Rebecca Cooney, who devised the original concept for the series.